Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Hey, you know who I saw this morning?
Who's that?
The person used to sit in there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Sam's in the building.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, she was stuck at the door downstairs.
Oh.
She couldn't run away from me.
Oh.
No, she may pop by a little bit later on. We'll see. She's filling in on another one of our sister stations this morning.
Oh,
so
how nice.
You know,
okay.
I don't know if spot blocks are timing right, but I didn't see her this morning. Had a brief conversation. Hopefully, if anything, I'll see her after the show today. Working through Robbie's rundown here on Twin Cities News Talk. We're down to number one. Before we get to that, real quick. In the rundown, Robbie, you had mentioned Pelosi stepping down from the House leadership. We'll stay in Congress. Forgot to mention this earlier. There is a front runner.
Yeah, I was trying to guess during the break in here before I looked it up, but go ahead.
Yeah, so to secede her, I'm using that term appropriately, right?
Succeed her. Secede would be
like a state splitting off from another state, right?
No, succeed. This isn't like the Reconstruction. Come on.
I love confusing you.
Yes.
It makes me laugh.
Very much so.
I can't tell. John,
is he confusing
making
me?
A joke? Or
you know, I think the
last. Serious?
I think Quebec wanted to secede in the early 90s.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Yes, yeah, we've talked about that.
That's what I'm, yeah. Yes. Yeah, that was that big Quebec morning on the show.
Yes, correct.
It's going to end up in one of the best ofs while I'm on vacation next week.
Oh, and I'm going to be singing O Canada. En français.
Representative Hakeem Jeffries, Democrat out of New York, appears to be the front runner.
Oh, no, Hakeem. Oh, no. He's awful.
Oh, you know Hakeem.
I know. I don't know Hakeem. I know of Hakeem Jeffries and his interesting policies that and his interesting words that he's had on the people of New York City. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, and oddly, before he entered politics, a spokesperson for Axe Body Spray.
Oh, come on now. I just had somebody call me off the air. I won't say who it was. And basically, I was like, you know, I answer the phone. I say, KTLK, do you want to talk to John? No, I want to talk to you about Axe body wash. I was like, oh, really? She's like, oh, are you a manly man? I said, I don't know.
It was glorious, though, when you brought up, we were talking about the thefts. The retail thefts, and specifically Target,
yes.
Lost $600 million
yes.
over the course of the past year in retail thefts.
Yes.
And you mentioned how they had put your body wash behind
lock and key.
Behind lock glass.
Yes.
But you said it was Axe body wash, and what I loved about it was you said it with such confidence. It reminded me of one of my first full-time radio jobs working in rock radio, where I walked into the promotions studio, and the promotions director is there, the program director is there, the guy that I'm hosting the show with is there.
Right, so Full House.
Right, Full House. Just moved into my new apartment, right? And again, rock radio. And one of them was kind enough to say, you know, how are things going? Man, things are going great. How's the new place? The place is fantastic. I'm excited. There's a liquor store right next door. And it was awesome because yesterday I went over and there was a brand new flavor of Zima out. And I was really looking forward to it. So I picked myself up a sixer of that. And if you know, I think if they could have, they would have fired me on the spot.
Come on.
But I said it with such confidence, like it was not even an issue. And they were, I think that's what really threw them off. So it reminded me quite a bit about you going, yeah, my Axe body wash is just behind lock and key. What the hell? You know, it just.
Well, we're almost completing bingo on the 90s bingo card with Singled Out, Axe, Zima. I think Saved by the Bell is next. And maybe a little 90210.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of numbers.
Yeah.
Number one.
Well, I haven't finished Hakeem yet.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
Well, he's not number one.
No, he's not. Just real quick on Hakeem.
That's all right.
I had one more item.
No problem. I'll hit a different number one.
That's all right. It's fine. Oh, even more exciting.
Yeah.
I like the other ones,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I know you do.
Hakeem is a lawyer from Central Brooklyn. I was kidding about him being a spokesperson for Axe Body Spray, for those that are curious. Self-described far-left Democrat who appears to be angling behind the scenes to win the Democrat House leadership position. He's a big election denier.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter if you're on the left. Denied the outcomes of the 2016 election. In 2020, he tweeted that former President Donald Trump will never be accepted as a legitimate president. Keep pouting. History will never accept you as a legitimate president, he tweeted. He tweeted in 2020, let's be clear, Donald. The only person trying to steal the election is you and your buddies in the Kremlin.
Oh, boy.
The more we learn about the 2016 election, the more illegitimate it becomes. America deserves to know whether we have a fake president in the Oval Office. Hashtag Russian interference, he tweeted in 2018. So, yeah, we've got to... We're definitely, you know, upscaling, upgrading.
Sure.
Replacing Nancy, so we'll see if he ends up playing out. All right, you can go ahead and move on to the next one.
Next up, fast, furious, and freaking expensive.
Number one.
There we go. Budget for Fast X, the 10th film in the Universal's lucrative Fast and Furious action franchise.
You need to change that title. That's not working for me.
Fast X?
As a fan of the films, that's just not... Yeah, that's not...
No good?
Yeah. Well, it's probably just me, but I can't... I immediately thought of Vin Diesel in XXX.
Sounds like a designer drug. Fast X, no?
Sounds like a cologne.
Now, there you go.
Axe Body Spray presents Fast X.
If you want to smell like a manly man, Fast X is your fragrance. The budget for Fast X, the 10th film in Universal's lucrative Fast and Furious action franchise, has ballooned to $340 million, John, according to individuals with knowledge of the production. That's 70% more than the reported $200 million budget for 2021's F9, the Fast Saga, and easily the most expensive entry in an action series that has generated $6.6 billion worldwide in ticket sales. The surging price tag, which factors in tax incentive offsets, can be blamed on numerous budget-busting elements, increased salaries for series star Vin Diesel and the rest of the franchise ensemble cast, general increases in production costs caused by global inflation, and charges for pandemic testing requirements mandated by COVID-19 safety protocols.
Yeah, Vin's not getting any younger, man. He needs that masseuse is expensive.
Combine this with the marketing budget required for a global blockbuster like F&F, and theatrical profits for Fast X could be significantly lower than previous installments and perhaps fail to materialize at all. And since the Jurassic World trilogy just wrapped and the Fast series is due to end after an 11th installment planned for 2024, the studio will need to redouble its efforts to develop new tentpole franchises while leaning on lower budget genre projects that might have a greater profit potential. So Fast X has ballooned to $340 million, but can it still turn a profit for Universal?
I think there was a thought of crossing the franchises between Jurassic and the Fast franchises.
Seriously?
Yeah, yeah.
Cars and dinosaurs?
Sounds like
a 5-year-old bedsheet.
There was a discussion, I think, at one point. I don't know if it was just fan dream or whatever. The Fast franchise is fascinating to me. Just in how, you know, it started off as this little film, which was essentially... it was Point Break on wheels, as much as Days of Thunder was Top Gun on rubber. You know, when you actually look at the plot line of the original Fast and Furious, it was just a redo of Point Break with Keanu Reeves. And then it just ended up getting, and the more ridiculous it got, the more popular it got. But you reach a point of diminishing returns on this, because I was all on board with it. You kind of go, all right, this is getting crazy. Oh, now this turned into, now it's a whole spy thing. You know, now this is amped up James Bond. And then even with the last, I kind of got lost on the last one. Even I was like, okay, I've seen it. When they ended up in space, even for a guy like me, I was like, that's a bit much. $340 million.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah. So, wow. I know. We'll see. I mean, I'll still go to the theater to see it.
Right.
But as an example, I own all of the Fast and Furious movies, but I did not buy Fast 9. Mm-hmm. So I really should get it just to complete my collection. So.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. And we will try and do better on Monday. And John, we also...
That's right. We have Vikings tickets to give away on today's show. So be listening for your chance to call in and win. Could happen at any time.
Yeah, I'm not sure when we're giving them away yet.
If I look at the show. Oh, I know when I'm giving them away.
They're on the sheet.
Actually stick to the show sheet, which rarely happens. So, but we will have Vikings tickets for this this weekend's game against
correct.
Dallas.
Yes.
We'll be 9-1.
Sunday, 3:25. And I did look it up that if the Vikings do win the next two against the Cowboys and Patriots, and the Packers lose next Sunday night in Philadelphia, the Vikings would clinch the NFC North.
But they're good. I mean, but it's kind of still it will just, I mean, they're going to clinch that
at some point.
It's a foregone conclusion.
That is correct.
That's the soonest that we can clinch.
They have 5 of the next 6 games at home. They better clinch soon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unless they just end up falling apart now.
But as I've said, they need the number one seed to have 2 home games and not have to go on the road and get a bye. If they don't get the number one seed, then they still may have to go on the road.
What'll be really interesting to see is, because they, even for as little as I follow during the week commentary around the NFL, even I know that the Vikings have been flying under the radar this season. There just hasn't been a lot of, even being 8-1, there just has not been a lot of conversation around them. But given, as Robbie had in his rundown last hour, if you missed it, listen to the 6 o'clock hour of the podcast on the iHeartRadio app when the show is over. But the clip of Paul Allen calling those key plays in last week's game has completely gone viral. You couple that with the Vikings being 8-1, and I imagine the commentary around the team is going to erupt heading into this weekend, if it hasn't already.
Yes, and with 5 of the next 6 games at home, including a Thanksgiving night game against the Patriots, who are not here all the time, and as you said, the tickets for that game are red hot. They're the hottest ticket in town. They're the hottest ticket in town, and it should be a fired up atmosphere Sunday afternoon, 3:25, as the star on the helmet comes to town.
It's such an amazing, it's a really cool story emerging with the Vikings this season. And I hope, I think obviously we all hope that, we make it to the Super Bowl, right? It's so hard. We know this, right? I can just see the look on Robbie's face. You could wipe out on talking about how difficult it is, right? It's like winning just a NASCAR race for me and my viewer or a championship.
Right.
The storyline, though, around this team, between the changing in the coaching staff, between the viral video, the prior viral video, even though it didn't go nearly as big as what happened with Paul Allen, of Kirk Cousins on the plane. You had which team tried to, it was the Commanders. The Correct. Commanders tried to go and do their version of it, and it just fell flat of them on the plane with the chains around the neck. Yes. How much fun this team is having. Now you've got voice of the Vikings, Paul Allen, this video. They're 8-1 heading into this weekend. It is such a cool storyline that I really hope continues, because this could be just a, for lack of a better term, as we head into the holiday season, this could be a magical season for the Minnesota Vikings.
And if obviously you've not followed the entire history of the Vikings, but the last 30 years or so, they pop up once or twice a decade and have magical seasons like this. 98, 2000, 2009, 2017, and now 2022, this decade, is shaping up to be one of those seasons. All those seasons did not end in even a Super Bowl appearance, and we'll see what the future holds here come early 2023.
It's funny, the biggest thing that I had attached, the biggest Vikings thing that I had in my life prior to coming here almost 7 years ago, was one of my first radio gigs as a board op for an oldie station, and they had the KCAL was the rock station attached to it, KCAL.
Okay.
The morning show host there, just the quintessential rock guy, was the biggest Vikings fan that I've still ever really come across, to be honest with you. I think multiple tattoos, wore Vikings garb in, out of season. Great, greatest guy.
Nice guy.
Yeah, nice guy. Fantastic dude. But just, had a beard like ZZ Top and just was like the diehard of diehard Vikings fans. Okay. So, yeah.
Wow.
Speaking of magic, fans love that Tim Allen is reprising his role as Santa for the Disney Plus miniseries, The Santa Clauses. Critics are complaining, though, he's too much of a right-wing Santa. In one scene, Allen's character complains about the state of modern society. This is what he says. Saying Merry Christmas to all has suddenly become problematic, he observes. That's all. So Tim Allen's character, as Santa in the show, says saying Merry Christmas to all has suddenly become problematic. The AV Club, online website, fairly popular, writes, what was going on in the minds of the writers as they penned this semi-political one-liner? An article was written about this. One line. Digital Trends had a similar reaction to that moment. To suggest it strips the story of some of its charm is an understatement. But with only two episodes to go on, the series plans for its right-wing Santa are almost certainly going to make or break the show, that reviewer observed. Also noting how Tim Allen's character seems like he's spent too much of the Christmas off-season watching Fox News. It was one line, and a benign line at that. Showrunner Jack Burdett actually had to address the line during an interview with Deadline. The interviewer explicitly asked about the lightning rod quote. And this is the media that we live in. This is the world that we live in. You know, and I'm gonna make a pretty big jump in extrapolating this, but when you go back and you look at the results of these midterm elections, it really does, in my opinion, sort of highlight, underscore what Biden did, what the left did in their, you know, democracy is at stake line of attack against Republicans in the closing weeks of this election cycle. Because there's a media that just falls in lockstep with it. We talked about this. I previewed this at the start of the show this morning. And, I mean, we could spend the rest, I won't, but we could spend the rest of the show just going through, just you pick any random series on TV right now, except for maybe Yellowstone, and the number of woke, anti-right, pro-left imagery, commentary, and one line out of the Santa Clauses elicits articles and having to be addressed by the showrunner, to which he even said, right? He was asked if there was any back and forth on including that line. And he said the writers did consider the implications. Yeah, we did, the showrunner said. This is something that I just think is silly, but then I'm like, I don't know. He went on to say this. I mean, look, we also had a joke at one point where Santa is on his rounds. They're going in for a landing and somebody's shooting something up at him. And Noel the elf, who rides with Santa, says something like, a war on Christmas. I'm like, yeah, I don't want to go that far. In a recent interview, Hollywood director David Zucker made Airplane, classic 80s comedy, raunchy 1980s comedy. He said in a video that was posted earlier this week that the only way to make a particular movie in the current climate would be to do it without the jokes. He's 100% correct. I mean, just go back. I mean, look, go back and watch. I mean, that's just on the woke political correctness level. I'm not even venturing into the conservative commentary. And you want to look at how quickly things change. I mean, go and this weekend, go watch The Hangover. And just consider how many problematic jokes are in that particular film in the short period of time since its release.
Oh, come on. I mean, my buddy and I were having a discussion about this a few weeks ago about some of the movies that cannot be made today.
Yeah,
you
no
want
way.
To talk about Superbad? Are you kidding me? No chance. No. Old school? No shot.
I mentioned this when it happened, but I was stunned. Channel surfing on a weekend, and it was TFC? Is that the channel, TFC?
IFC.
IFC, thank you.
That's, yes.
Yeah, so on cable, unedited, I was stunned to see the Blazing Saddles was showing, and it was and it was unedited.
So IFC is one of the few channels that will show. I mean, if it's on AMC, a lot of that stuff is blanked out, but IFC shows it full.
Unbelievable. Just, you know, one line. One line in this. And, oh my gosh, I just right-wing Santa. Minneapolis bans pro-life activists from sections of public sidewalks. But if you want to go shut down a freeway, it's all good. We'll get to this. And the House probe into Joe Biden and Hunter Biden coming up on Twin Cities News. Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. John Justice, along with Robbie, grabbing your talk backs this morning. Also give us a call, 651-989-5855. This is an investigation of Joe Biden. House GOP leaders vow corruption probe. We'll dive into this in just a moment. We do have some talk backs to share with you this morning.
Yeah, which John and I have had to duck some bows and arrows here. Hang on.
Listen to the guy who lives for Star Wars and has a Star Wars podcast teasing the guy who uses Axe body wash like, I don't know, 50, 60% of the men under 40 use. Keep watching Star Wars, John.
Yeah,
I Robbie, I thought you were older than a junior hire. Insert snicker here.
Please continue to use the Nancy soundbite. That was hysterical.
Keep playing the Sarah Butterpuddle clip, but sparingly. And then regarding Twitter, I think a lot of the Twitter employees were confused by Elon's email because they didn't know the meaning of hard work.
I missed the news quiz. It was something I would look forward to on Fridays. And after listening to Robbie's rundown, I kind of feel a little run down. Could use a nice news quiz to pick me up.
Wow.
The talkbacks are a whole new world, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. I told boss man Chad yesterday that if it continues the way that it's going, Robbie will be wanting a raise at some point in time. So talked about this a bit earlier in the week. Minneapolis City Council adopted an ordinance yesterday that will prohibit pro-life sidewalk counselors from being on sections of public sidewalks. Thomas Wilkin, he's the Pro-Life Action Ministry Sidewalk Counseling Manager, says, "We believe this proposal is unconstitutional and want to express our opposition as we prepare to challenge it should it go into effect." Now, Wilkin wrote that the ordinance will prevent sidewalk counselors from standing on parts of the public sidewalk outside the Uptown Planned Parenthood to offer life-saving literature to abortion clients driving in. The ordinance states that occupying driveways of abortion facilities will be prohibited. It defines a driveway as that portion of a right-of-way, including a sidewalk or a bikeway that provides vehicular access from a street to a reproductive healthcare facility. It goes on to say the sidewalk counselors must not enter the driveway of abortion facilities unless they are crossing the driveway completely from one side of the driveway to the other without stopping.
From the Paul Bunyan Plumbing.
.com.
Tickets to give away before the end of today's show. Be listening for your chance to pick those up for this weekend's Dallas game. 3 o'clock, U.S. Bank Stadium.
325, yes, sir.
Oh, it's 325?
Yeah. They do that for TV purposes. And it is the CBS national game, so they will get the number one crew, Jim Nance and Tony Romo.
All right. Because typically, like, noon starts at noon. That's what I always appreciate about the NFL. Typically, when you, it's like, a game starts at this time, it starts at this time. You watch a NASCAR race, and race starts at 2, and it's like an hour and a half later. Well, so
in the last 5 to 10 years, they have moved those kickoffs to 425 Eastern, 325 here, because the noon games tend to run just a little bit long, and they don't want them overlapping.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Two Republican lawmakers poised to take over key House committees in the new year vowed to investigate President Joe Biden's potential involvement in the shady business schemes exposed on his son's abandoned laptop. Representative James Comer out of Kentucky, the incoming head of the House Oversight Committee, and Representative Jim Jordan out of Ohio, who will chair the House Judiciary Committee, outlined their plans at a news conference. Came as a surprise yesterday. Said their probe of alleged international influence peddling will be aided by whistleblowers' testimony, new revelations about Hunter Biden's dealings. Comer said, "I want to be clear, this is an investigation of Joe Biden. The laptop, which Hunter Biden abandoned at a computer repair shop in Wilmington, Delaware in April 2019, has been a trove of information about the younger Biden's business dealings, although the FBI allegedly pressured social media platforms to stop the story from getting out prior to the 2020 election. outlets have since plummeted for an endless supply of stories about Hunter Biden's debauchery and greed. And only if you're following conservative outlets are you actually going to end up seeing the vast majority of this, since the media pretty much ignored all of it. Never forget how this story has changed, said Jordan. When it started, it was, no, it's not his laptop. Then it was, well, it's his laptop. But remember, it's Russian disinformation and no one did anything wrong. That was... It was so utterly ridiculous when that claim was made. I mean, anybody just with a smidge of intelligence to even consider that what was on that laptop was Russian disinformation. But people bought it. Then it turned into, well, maybe he did something wrong, but President Biden didn't know about it. And now it's, well, maybe President Biden knew about it and was involved, but didn't influence his decisions. Although the laptop is replete with images of Hunter Biden smoking crack, cavorting with prostitutes, Comer said the real issue is whether it shows President Biden is corrupt or compromised. This evidence raises troubling questions about whether Joe Biden is a national security risk and whether he is compromised by foreign governments. Comer pointed out to photos showing then Vice President Biden meeting with his shady business associates of his son. The investigation reveals that a family that was engaged with some of America's most powerful adversaries, planning to sell one of the largest sources of cobalt for electric vehicles in the world to the Chinese, said Comer. Comer cited dozens of shell companies the Biden family set up that he said included millions of dollars in wire transfers, flights on Air Force Two to conduct personal business meetings with heads of state. He said, all with Joe Biden's knowledge. And, you know, this hasn't been talked about either in a long time. But there was quite a bit of commentary during the primary process of Joe Biden running and then, you know, eventually becoming the nominee, that a big reason for this was because he wanted to become president to avoid this scrutiny. Because there's plenty of it out there. I mean, even what Comer and Jordan laid out, while there was some new information that I wasn't even aware of, doesn't even touch upon the treasure trove of details, especially as it relates to Hunter Biden's business dealings. When he was getting paid as, what, $30,000 a week or month or something like that. Comer went on to say, all the while, Biden turned a blind eye. Many transactions related to these businesses have raised red flags at all U.S. banks. Those banks allegedly generated more than 150 suspicious activity reports, filings they were required by law to make when transactions raised alarms. They call them SARs, and they show that Hunter Biden was conducting business with suspected human traffickers. We want to know what the Biden administration is trying to hide from the American people and why they are not being transparent. Comer also alleged the Bidens tried to hatch a scheme to sell China liquefied natural gas, promised access to the future administration, and used government resources to squash stories about Hunter Biden. Jordan said the committees will seek all suspicious activity reports, most of which the Biden administration has so far refused to hand over. What will be most interesting about this is how the left, and specifically the DNC, responds to all of this. You know, if they want somebody new to run, you know, they've got outs here. And they don't even have to respond to any of it. They can just not show an abundance of opposition to the alarms and the allegations being raised by the House GOP leaders. I still remember before the election when Tony Bobulinski came out and how the moment felt like it had gravity and weight to it. He was so genuine in how he delivered his concerns of dealing with Hunter Biden, specifically relating to his father, Joe Biden, his views and opinions of the potential corruption going on, and thinking that it was going to be just an election game-changing moment. And then it just fell flat because the media flat out ignored it. And this goes back to what he was saying about how this whole thing changed, right? It's not his laptop. It's his laptop and his Russian disinformation. No one did anything wrong. Well, maybe he did something wrong, but Biden didn't know anything about it. So it'll be interesting to see. Now, obviously, Trump's going to play a factor in all of this, right? If Trump does end up gaining momentum, polls right now do not look great. We'll share those with you a little bit later on. But if Trump does end up gaining momentum, then I doubt the DNC is going to want to capitalize on these controversies. But if they're banking on somebody new, because we did see a bit of a turn sort of, it was earlier on in the year, but there was a bit of a turn by the mainstream media on Joe Biden until we got closer to the election, and then they backed off just in terms of how the economy was going and certainly his, his cognitive ability. Oh, speaking of which, before we dive into his student loan forgiveness scam being a bigger deal than we thought, this is kind of funny. A recent TikTok trend is using audio of President Biden failing in epic fashion to convince Americans that he's mentally focused. Now, the gaffe comes from a September interview on 60 Minutes when CBS correspondent Scott Pelley asked Biden about his mental capacity to run the United States.
How would you say your mental focus is?
Oh, it's focused. I have trouble even saying to myself, my own head, the number of years. I no more think of myself as being as old as I am than fly. I mean, it's just not, I haven't observed anything in terms of, there's not things I don't do now that I did before, whether it's physical or mental or anything else.
Well, if anybody think if we're doing it for the first time now in the 21st century, going into the 20th century, going into the second quarter of the 21st century, that we'd say 12 years is enough? Think 12 years is enough in the going into 20, 30, 40, 50?
Social media has seized on the former audio there. Have used it for a host of comedic content. One user lip-synced to Biden's response but changed the words to mental focus after three kids, writing in her caption, "You could say I have Biden brain." There's a bunch of these. They're hysterical. Doesn't matter to the voters. We know this. He's a joke. The president's bizarre response to a question about his mental faculties ironically proved that he's not at all mentally focused. Practically every week, there are new Biden gaffes to reinforce the unsettling feeling that our president is not fit to serve. At a news conference in Bali on Monday, the president couldn't read from a paper that reportedly contained a list of pre-approved reporters for him to call on. He actually said out loud, "I'm having trouble reading this." Fox News reported that between September 26th and October 24th, while Biden was on the campaign trail for Democrats ahead of the midterms, he averaged nearly a gaffe per day. Notably, he called the General Motors CEO Mary Barra, Amy Barrett. Barrett, of course, is not in fact the CEO of General Motors, but a Supreme Court justice. Then he referred to Debbie Wasserman Schultz as a friend of the Senate, and even forgot the name of a candidate that he was with at the time endorsing. And of course, you've got that next governor, what's his name, Wes, said Biden at the Get Out the Vote rally. Then he turned to the audience members holding a Wes Moore sign and exclaimed, "Wes Moore! Guy's the real deal, man." In the meantime, the Biden administration said yesterday they plan to ask the Supreme Court to reinstate the president's student debt cancellation plan, according to a Thursday legal filing, warning that millions of Americans will face financial strain if the plan remains stalled in court when loan payments are scheduled to restart in January. The Justice Department is fighting to keep Biden's plan alive after it was halted by two federal courts in recent weeks. A fantastic piece out of the Federalist, though, lays out, we talked about this a little bit earlier in the week, now we have more of the details. But a federal court vacated, as we mentioned, the Biden administration's $400 billion student loan forgiveness plan on Thursday, calling it an unconstitutional exercise of Congress's legislative power. Unfortunately, by the time the decision was handed down, the real goal of the gimmick had already been achieved. Gen Z and millennials turned out in droves on election day to turn a red wave into a red trickle. Next hour, we've got a piece, fascinating piece, talking about those Gen Z voters and how the GOP abandoned the opportunity to capitalize on the frustrations that Gen Z voters had with the COVID pandemic response. It's a fascinating piece just getting into steps that could have been made by, unfortunately, establishment GOP that were not capitalized on. That doesn't mean the GOP could have captured all of the Gen Z vote, but it does serve to highlight how the wide margin in which Gen Z went and broke for Democrats along the same lines of how unmarried women did the same thing. Now, getting to the student loan forgiveness, which played into this as well in terms of getting the Gen Z vote out, we know now that the potential recipients of this largesse don't care about the moral implications either. When President Joe Biden first announced his forgiveness plan in August, the usual suspects fell all over themselves in praise of the unprecedented transfer of wealth. You had the squad members that were all tweeting about how this is going to change, save lives, change lives. You had business writers of Forbes claiming the policy would encourage small business creation and provide a lifeline to tens of millions of Americans and Main Streets across America. A recent poll, though, conducted by Intelligent.com, tells a far different story. The online magazine, which bills itself as being centered around a lifelong commitment to education and continuous improvement, surveyed around 1,250 individuals who either had applied or were planning to apply to the program about what they planned to do with the extra money they would have every month from Biden's student loan forgiveness. Nearly three-fourths of them admitted that they would spend the money not on basic necessities or fulfilling their entrepreneurial dreams, but on non-essentials, including vacations, smartphones, and drugs and alcohol. Even more disturbing than that, the recipients openly embraced their hypocrisy. 73% of them admitted that using student relief to buy non-essential goods is wrong. I mean, you want a snapshot of the problem that we have in America right now? Just how morally bankrupt huge swaths of the voting public are. And again, it provides you just a little bit more insight into how what you may have perceived to be good messaging, and I may have perceived to be good messaging, of those running for office as Republicans kind of miss just how morally corrupt so much of our society is, and how even though they're dealing with rising inflation and high gas prices and are willing to go on TikTok and mock our current president, and all of that would spell to you and to me, well, if we're going to want change, it doesn't matter when you have the ability to vote in and keep a party in power. It's going to give you free stuff. 70% also agreed that in terms of their spending habits, it would be possible for them to spend less and save more money. But they don't. Considering the obscenely high income threshold for the plan, $125,000 for a single borrower that doubled for married borrowers, it's clear that most of the applicants aren't looking for a lifeline, but an unearned windfall so they can live their best lives on the taxpayer dime. It was one of the arguments that I've always had as it comes to raising the minimum wage for service level work, for, you know, starter jobs. Because typically people don't think like that. They already have sort of a set budget in their mind. They've established the life that they enjoy based off of the amount of money that they're making. To arbitrarily just increase their salaries without attaching merit to it, the vast majority of those individuals aren't going to go and actually use that money for good. They're going to go and waste it on things that they didn't previously have to go and spend money on. And the individuals that will take advantage of it, right, those are individuals that were using the jobs appropriately in the first place. That weren't looking at, you know, working a drive-through as being a career. Millennials lag behind previous generations when it comes to marriage and having children as well. Gen Z is expected to continue down this road. Only 60% of them are expected to marry by age 40. we've got a massive problem as it relates to the birth rate right now. So much so, you actually have Chuck Schumer out there talking. I mean, it's a great replacement theory. He's actually out there talking about giving, and you knew it was coming, right? Amnesty to dreamers here in this country, those that are here in the country illegally, because of the fact that the Gen Z crowd isn't going out and having babies, and we... Then, of course, there is the younger generation's propensity for taking offense at anything that contradicts their views. 40% of millennials support government-enforced limits on statements that are offensive to minority groups, a powerful indication that this group prefers enjoying the comforts of conformity to shouldering the burdens of liberty in a responsible manner. Now, lucky for the country, the Texas federal court's decision has halted this unconstitutional payoff, at least for now. As you just mentioned, they're going to appeal to the Supremes. The Biden administration has stopped accepting applications while filing an appeal with the 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, where conservatives enjoy a dominant majority. Should the case eventually appear before the Supreme Court, the program, as currently constituted, will probably fail. That failure means that if the White House is actually concerned about relieving student debt, it will have to provide it the old-fashioned way by going through Congress. Even without the red wave, that won't be an easy sell, especially with the GOP now controlling the House. 651-989-5855. Why the GOP lost in the suburbs, Minnesota's largest voting bloc. We'll talk with Representative Joe McDonald. We'll get his thoughts on the potential of marijuana legalization and the upcoming Minnesota State Legislative Session. Your talkbacks and phone calls on the way. You're listening to Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM.